May crude oil futures are back on the positive side of zero, but not by much. Corn is at multi-year lows. Beans and wheat are lower. Cattle are sharply lower. And lean hog futures are just trying to figure out if the industry can continue to function. Wow. And some states are starting to reopen. We'll find out what a member of the White House Task Force to Reopen America thinks about that.
Live from the seclusion of our homes via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with the conversation with Senator Joni Ernst, Brett Crosby from Custom Ag Solutions, and right after the news, Annalisa Laca from Farm Milk. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis Michelson, thank you so much. It's good to talk with you again. We got a beautiful day in northeast Iowa, and there is seed going in the ground. It's still a little chilly at night, you guys.
A little chilly.
There's still, if you've got any water standing, there is still some ice forming at night, but boy, they are out there and putting seed in the ground. And you know what? You know what? They're looking at soil conditions that they haven't seen for quite a while, Davis.
Is that right?
Oh, I mean, well, that's what I'm picking up from social media, at least, and from a couple of conversations. But the seed bed that they are working up is as good, if not better, than anything that they have had in the last 4 or 5 years.
All right.
So,
well,
yeah.
We're going to need all the bushels we can get, I guess. I don't know how to feel about it, man. I don't.
Yeah, no, I don't know if we do need all that we can get. But after what they've gone through to in the battle to get a crop seeded the last few years, who's to tell them no?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some agronomists out there that are screaming it. I mean, literally screaming, stay out of the field. Don't do it. It's still too cold. But I think some of the guys are saying, listen, you know what? This seed has survived some cold temperatures in the past. We're going to go for it. So,
right.
They're out there doing it. Man, what a time to have a member of that White House task force to reopen America on the show.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. Senator Joni Ernst is going to be with us here in just a little bit. Mm-hmm. And the reason that the timing is so perfect is because the debate, the concern, the conversation, thankfully, I feel like it's more of a conversation than anything right now about when is the right time to do it. I mean, some of the extremists have taken it to the hair pulling, hair on fire. Anybody that wants to reopen America right now is just stupid. There are some of those out there, and there are some on the other extremes that are saying, listen, we're never going to get to where we need to get unless we just completely open things up right now. Well, the answer is probably somewhere in the middle. We'll talk with Senator Ernst about it here in just a little bit. All right, man, let's get to the news.
Sure thing. Well, we got to start here. May West Texas Intermediate crude oil futures fell into negative territory yesterday, closing around $40 below zero, meaning that sellers must effectively pay buyers to take barrels off their hands. As the Wall Street Journal put it, it would cost you less under that contract to fill your bathtub with oil than to fill it with water. The May contract expires today, with the sell-off representing very short-term concerns. Now, Chip, with storage increasingly scarce, nobody wants to take delivery on that expiring contract. Investors are particularly worried about storage reaching capacity in Cushing, the main U.S. hub. Reports suggest that some 200 VLCCs, Chip, that's very large crude carriers, so tankers, will be used for storage in May. Meanwhile, the June crude contract slid as much as 42% overnight to around $12 a barrel as Brent crude fell to just above $18. Let me check my quote screen. Yeah, I've got the June contract now at $14.97, down $5.46 on the day, Chip.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. This is just, it's delivery market, delivery contract issues that the market is dealing with. And when you've got the one delivery point down there at Cushing, it's hard to manage. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, you're paying somebody to take your oil.
Yep. Well, on the ethanol side, experts say at least 46% of the nation's ethanol production capacity is offline. Chip, as we've discussed, the lagging economics in the industry are driving corn prices lower, as roughly 2 of every 5 rows of corn grown by farmers is used in ethanol production. Meanwhile, EPA says it has received 26 applications for small refinery exemptions for the 2019 compliance year. Okay. You want to go into that, or should we just let
not
it
really.
Lay?
Uh-uh.
All right. No. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is reportedly in critical condition after cardiovascular surgery last week. South Korean officials deny the claim, but Kim missed a major public event last week in honor of his grandfather's birthday. The last time Kim was seen in public was April 11th. The Trump administration is still seeking details.
You know, this is one of the strangest stories that I've seen. Because last night, CNN, Reuters, Bloomberg, Fox were all reporting that, hey, there is concern over Kim Jong-un's health. And all of social media was like, yeah, right. You've got to be kidding me. Quit pulling my leg on this. It's crazy.
Well, President Trump tweeted that he'll sign an executive order to temporarily suspend immigration into the United States to contain the spread of the coronavirus, though he did not offer specifics such as time frame or the scope or who would be affected. But Chip, important to note, the executive order is expected to include exceptions for migrant farm workers. That's about 10% of the farm workforce.
Right.
And quickly, President's reworked Waters of the U.S. rule is expected to be published today. The measure will clarify the definition of a federally protected body of water or wetland. The Navigable Waters Protection Rule replaces the Obama administration's 2015 Clean Water Rule that Republicans and business groups criticized. Procedurally, the measure will go into effect in 60 days, although environmental groups have said they will challenge the measure. Chip.
Yeah, it's kind of, that's a reminder that even with everything that's happening around us, some of the more mundane things continue. Normally, that'd be headline news.
It would be huge.
The new WOTUS rule.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's bring in Annalisa Locke. She is the editor of Farm Journal's Milk. How you doing, Annalisa?
I'm doing great. How are you, Chip?
Good, good, good. So the aid package for dairy, how's it look to you?
It looks like it falls short. We'll see. I mean, exactly what, you know, there's still a lot of unknowns. We know that it's that $125,000 is not enough to do any kind of meaningful help for any farm that's over 2,000 cows. How those payments get calculated for farms that are under that size, I think will be a crucial thing to know before we can really know, how helpful it actually is.
Yeah. Yeah, and we figured it out a couple of ways. You know, it's enough to add to the revenue off of, if you're talking about a 2,500 cow dairy, it's enough to add revenue for maybe 2 weeks, and it might be enough to feed those cows for 10 days.
Yeah, it's roughly enough to feed 2,500 cows for 10 days. So not much help there. But then also, you know, the package does include some purchases, which we're excited about. The only thing there is that, you know, when we think about how long those purchases are going to take to influence the market,
right?
A lot of farmers don't have time to wait for that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Dairy is one of those markets that if we can, we need to start those purchases immediately. Pork, beef might be a different story, but dairy, we've got the product ready to roll. We just need to ramp up some of those processors again. That'll take a little bit of time. Annalisa, thank you so much.
Exactly.
We'll talk to you again. All right.
Thanks, Chip.
You bet. That's Annalisa Locke, editor of Farm Journal's Milk. We got Senator Joni Ernst up next on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by ClaraFly Larvicide, your feed-through fly control solution.
Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture, farms on, for our family and yours.
Show us what farming on means to you. Text a photo with the message farm on, one word, capital F, capital O-N, farm on, one word. Text the photo to 31313 and We'd love to see what you are doing to farm on. Senator Joni Ernst from the state of Iowa joins us right now. Senator Ernst, thank you so much for making time for us this morning. Everything okay down there?
Yes, everything is well. We are just fighting through coronavirus as best we can.
Yeah. Yeah. And Senator Schumer says that the Senate is close to another round of funding for the CARES Act. What is the status on that? Is Senator Schumer correct? Are you close?
Well, I am hopeful that we can come to an agreement. Of course, we want to focus on COVID-19 related items, and there have been some roadblocks thrown up by Democrats. They would love to see more state and local funding, but that funding they want to use to bail out communities that have had poor performance in the past, made poor decisions. We're not in the mood to be bailing out bad performance from years ago. What we need to focus on is making sure that our people are safe and getting our businesses back up and going. That's what we need to focus on.
Now, the first time that the CARES Act was debated, we ended up with some funding for some projects in there that, I don't know, they didn't seem COVID-related to me. I understand that they're about the communities, like you just said, Senator, but they're not. We're not seeing anything else getting tagged onto this, are we? Shouldn't this be a clean bill?
This should be a clean bill, and that's why this is taking so long. Is Republicans, my colleagues in the Senate, we all simply want to fund the programs that are working, the necessary things like the Paycheck Protection Program. Yep. We want to fund our hospitals because they are seeing the brunt of some of this economic injury out there. We want to make sure we're protecting things directly related to COVID-19 and lost revenues or maybe additional expenses incurred because of the pandemic. They are wanting to fund all kinds of nice to have things. They want to bail out cities and communities again because of poor performance in the past. We need to focus on the issue at hand, and that is this global pandemic.
Absolutely. We need to stay focused on that. And one of the things that we need to stay and it amazes me that the rural hospitals are in the situation that they're in, because some of them are looking at furloughing employees, Senator. That's the exact opposite of what we want to see, thinking about how they might be in the middle of a surge before you know it.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have included in the CARES package $100 billion to ensure our healthcare providers and hospitals receive that financial support for that lost revenue. So many of our rural hospitals are really in jeopardy because they've lost the opportunity of the funding stream from elective surgeries. I'm also proposing that our county-owned hospitals, many of those throughout rural America, be made eligible to receive the relief we're providing through the Paycheck Protection Program, just like our small businesses. This would allow them to keep their staff on payroll and continue to serve our rural communities. I think that would be an important step forward.
Are you including the 25% for rent, administrative costs, stuff like that, in making the county-owned hospitals eligible for the PPP?
Right, exactly. They will
overhead
that they will have to absorb.
Yeah.
Yes. And so we are very cognizant of that and understanding that they are hanging on by a thread. And we know how devastating it would be to lose our rural hospitals. You would further see a decline in rural populations if we didn't have these critical services.
Absolutely. Okay. You and Senator Grassley, both on the White House task force to reopen America. What's the status? And do you think that some of the states might be moving a little too quickly?
Well, this is a constant discussion that we have, and we know that we certainly need to look at ways to get the economy back up and running. We need to do it in a safe and healthy way, and I do think that's possible. So through the discussions we are having with the president and the administration, as well as with the governors, is making sure that maybe those areas that are not as impacted can start easing up on restrictions and moving back into an active economy. Other areas, it will take a little bit longer, but every geographical location is going to be a little bit different. We can't just blanket, you know, say, okay, America's open again. There are a lot of different factors and metrics that we have to look at as we're opening up the economy.
And Senator, I think that there is, at least in portions of the population, there is the expectation that we're going to flip the switch, we're going to reopen America, we're going to lift the stay at home, and the economy is going to be right back at where it was on March 1. It's not the case, is it?
No, and Chip, I wish I could snap my fingers and make it all go away and we would be right back to normal. We had a very strong economy going into the pandemic. It is going to take a while to recover from that. Just recognizing that we have many people that are now laid off from their employers. We have businesses that will be closing. We recognize the difficulties that are out there. We have lost revenues that will not be going to our counties or to our local communities. There are just so many different issues. It's, you know, in talking with one of our large city mayors this morning and his city administrator, there are so many different streams of revenue that have been impacted, and that impacts every citizen in their community. It's going to take a while, and patience is a virtue. I know we all want to get back to life as normal, but you know, we just need to recognize it's going to take a while, even in our agricultural community, to get our feet back under us.
Right. Okay. In the livestock industry, so important in Iowa, the the illnesses in the labor force at the packing plants, the tensions between the workers and the ownership. Should the federal government be stepping in to make sure that these plants stay open, or is it best left to the individual companies?
Well, we are working in conjunction with the federal government and agencies like the CDC and OSHA, also working with those plant owners and managers, making sure that we are protecting those employees as well. And Governor Reynolds has been working on additional testing, which is extremely important. We understand that our food workers or food industry workers are part of that tremendous food supply chain. They are very, very important, and we need to make sure that they're protected so that they can go to their jobs and keep that supply chain operating.
Yeah, you got to be proud of what your National Guard is doing to help that happen.
I'm always, always proud of our National Guard.
Absolutely. Okay, the ethanol industry. There was no aid announced for the ethanol industry in the COVID aid package from USDA. Should there have been some help for ethanol?
Yes, the short answer, yes. I do believe so. And we are not driving as much, and we hear that from the oil industry. Well, it impacts us as well. Fuel consumption has gone down, and that means our biofuels producers and plants are continuing to take a beating. So, yes, there is so much involvement between our biofuels and our agricultural industry that you can't separate them. And so I do believe that there should have been dollars set aside for ethanol and for biofuels at the USDA. Unfortunately, it hasn't been the case yet, but I will continue fighting for our biofuel community. They are so important to our state.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what that package does look like, if there is a package, and what it will help them to do. I've got to ask you to keep this to 45 seconds, so I need your short answer, but how is this, what's happening, going to change U.S.-Chinese relations?
Well, this is going to be a rough go for us. The president spoke with Xi not all that long ago, and the Chinese president, he knows how important this is to maintain that relationship. And our president knows exactly how important this is for farmers and cattlemen. We will keep on working on it.
All right, Senator. Well, good luck to you on the task force, because it feels like you're going to be trying to thread the eye of a needle in doing this and getting the timing exactly right. Good luck to you.
Yes. Yes. Thanks so much. I appreciate your time this morning.
You bet. I appreciate yours, as well as do the AgriTalk listeners. That is Senator Joni Ernst from the state of Iowa. Okay. When we come back, damage to the cattle industry. How was it figured, and how does the package help? We're going to be talking about that next, right here on AgriTalk.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
Joining us now is ProFarmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, we've still got some moderate, at least, losses in corn, soybeans, and wheat going on, but they've cut those losses in half from earlier in the day, man. What is going on?
Yeah, well, they have, Chip, and I think if you look at corn, the May contract, it went down to 301, and the interesting part about that is that's the 2016 low on the weekly continuation chart, so it matched it. For now, that support is holding. We'll see if it gets retested again. Probably won't hold, but for now it is, and that has moved us off the lows. Same with the bean market somewhat. We saw the beans drop to their lowest level on a front month basis since May of last year. It's just more of the price pressure. But like you mentioned, we have worked off the earlier lows.
Yeah. Now, you said that 301 low probably won't hold in May corn. Is it just too easy?
Well, I think the first time it holds on the test, and
yeah,
typically the second time it doesn't,
right.
That's the reason for that comment.
Okay, very good. Live cattle, feeder cattle futures lower today.
Yeah, sharply lower to limit down in the front month or April live cattle contract there. We'd ran up off the lows earlier in the month and then kind of paused, and today it's rolling over. So just more concerns, I think, with packing plants either closing or slowing down operations.
Yeah, lean hogs must be getting some support from pork prices.
Well, pork and the huge discounts that those nearby contracts hold to the cash index.
Okay.
I think that's the story, because we're seeing some selling in the far deferred contracts there.
Very good. Thank you, Brian. That's ProFarmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Bear Plus Rewards. Sign in and start earning at mybearplus.com.
All right. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. We're going to talk some more about
Davis.
What's going on in this cattle. There he is. Can we hear that one more time? Who was that?
Davis. Semper Fi.
Davis.
There he is.
All right. AgriTalk!
Well, we're going to talk some more about what's going on in this cattle industry. Brett Crosby is with Custom Egg Solutions, also beefbasis.com. You guys know him on Twitter. It's at MBA Cowboy. He joins us right now. Brett, it's good to talk with you. How are you?
I'm doing well, Chip. How are you?
Doing just dandy, just dandy. Brett, boy, your work, your assessment of the damage done to the cattle industry that was released through the U.S. Cattlemen's Association really caught a lot of attention out there. $14.6 billion. How you got to that $14.6 billion has been talked about, but can you just kind of summarize it? What different sectors of the industry you're looking at?
Yeah, there's basically three sectors in the cattle industry.
Yep.
The feedlot sector, of course, sells to the packers, and they buy from the stalker sector that raises weaned calves to 800 pounds or thereabouts to put some frame on them so that they can be ready to feed and finish. And then, of course, the cow-calf guy is the guy on the ranch that raises calves and either sells them in the fall as right off the cow or weans them and backgrounds them for a little while and sells them in the winter.
Boy, figuring out the losses caused to the cow-calf guys because of the way that this market has been reacting and might react in the future with your spring calving, your fall calving, that had to be a challenge.
It certainly took some time. But we've created a model that is able to accurately forecast calf prices based on the feeder cattle futures, which made it a little bit easier.
Okay. All right. Very cool. So of those three sectors, on a per head basis, which one's feeling it the most?
Oh, far and away the feedlot sector. You know, they're looking at losses somewhere in the $400 a head range this summer.
That's unbelievable. And, you know, you've got the different sectors added up to 14.6, and USDA comes with the COVID aid package, and it's got $5.1 billion in it for the cattle industry. I mean, your reaction to that, Brett, I can kind of imagine what it's going to be, but what is your reaction?
Well, yeah, what did Reagan say? You know, the thing that scares people the most is we're from the government and we're here to help.
Right.
I think the USDA was in a difficult position because they were trying to they had $60 billion in requests from the ag community, and they had 19 to spend. But given that the problem with the model as it currently stands is twofold. First, the $125,000 per operation limit, which even for a family feedlot operation is, you know, around $7 to $10 a head, which, you know, might as well just be a Coke and a smile. And for the stalker guys, you know, a lot of those guys are running a couple thousand head, and you know, losing $400,000 and getting $125,000 cap, that's not really going to help. But the really big thing is the limit on the loss percentage in the second and third quarters. You know, they're only going to, as the model stands, the payout will only be 30% of the total loss.
Right. Which, forward losses. Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And for quarters one and two, which includes the cow calf people, and and you know, that's when the biggest losses are expected to be realized.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to ask this question: isn't the 125 per commodity cap? I mean, you said it, even for an average cow-calf operator, that's not a whole lot of money. But isn't it picking big, small over big?
Yes. And, you know, here's the problem. People in America don't understand what it really costs to raise livestock. Right. And the hog sector is, and dairy sectors are, boy, they're taking it on the chin too. Yeah. But you know, the average full-time cow calf operation is going to have a budget somewhere between $500,000 to $1 million. Right. And the public tends to have this idea in their mind that you know, we're raising cows over here on 40 acres with a mule, and
right.
And they don't, I mean, to put it into perspective, we get $125,000 cap that amounts to you know, let's just round it off and say 20% of our gross income, which is about 20% of our expenses, because we were just going to break even this fall. Now, to contrast that, Delta Airlines got $3.8 billion. Just one company got $3.8 billion. Their entire operating expense amounted to $3.7 billion last year. So they received, one company received the equivalent of their entire operating expenses for a year.
Yep.
And now that's taking away their fuel and the costs of the flight and all of that stuff. But I'm talking about, you know, their straight operating expenses, like
fixed costs,
salaries, those types.
Yeah.
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 And so, you know, this became political very quickly.
Yep.
Because the public doesn't understand what we really spend. Mm-hmm. They raised a ruckus over the MFP payments last year being so large to individual farmers, and so the USDA was kind of getting, not kind of, they were getting heat from senators and representatives.
Absolutely.
that said, hey, we don't want to see these big checks going to individual farmers. So that's where the $125,000 cap
right.
came from.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. Brett, how is this going to change the industry going forward?
Oh, boy, you know, it's really hard to tell at this point. But when people lose money, it's the mid-sized guys, it's the family farms,
yep.
the true family farms that go out of business. Commodities are commodities, and the low cost producer in commodity production wins. So, you know, we have learned that economies of scale are the way are one way to reduce costs.
Right.
And so the low cost producers either are the huge guys, or they're the guys in the cattle industry that, you know, have 50 cows and a job in town and don't really depend on them for their income. Anyone who depends on cattle for their income is really going to be squeezed
yeah.
by this. So I expect the feedlot industry, as it looks, to consolidate more. You know, we're going to see the big yards, the corporate yards, gobble up the small yards. I think we're going to lose capacity, which is going to affect supply and demand works between the sectors in the industry, just like it works between the industry and the
right.
consumer. So if there are more stocker cattle out there than there is feedlot space, then that means the stocker guy gets paid more, which means the cow-calf guy gets paid less, which means the cow-calf guy gets paid less. The bottom line is, you know, we're shedding money faster than the back seat sheds clothes on prom night. I mean, you know, it's just flying out the window.
Yep. Yep. Bleeding cash right now. There's no question about it. Brett, I want to have you on again sometime, but just I've literally got 15 seconds for this. What do you think of the 30-14 proposal?
I think it's a good way to ensure price discovery, because we've got to have price discovery, and it ensures that the amount of cash will be increased, and it will be distributed more evenly.
Gotcha.
Through the regions.
Brett, I'll get you back on sometime. We'll talk about some more of it, why you think there's some benefits to it. Thank you so much, Brett. That is Brett Crosby, Custom Ag Solutions and BeefBasis.com at MBA Cowboy. We'll be back with more AgriTalk in a moment.
AgriTalk is brought to you by the United Soybean Board. As demand for sustainability rises, meeting those demands remains a journey of continuous improvement. Which sustainable practices do you do now? Which ones could you adopt to improve your sustainable footprint?
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture, and is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Wow. I tell you, both conversations that we've had so far today, good grief. Senator Joni Ernst from Iowa on what it's going to take to lift the at-home status that we are currently in so many states across the country. Talking about what's going on at the slaughterhouses. And then the conversation with Brett Crosby from Custom Ag Solutions. There at the end, Davis, I mentioned the 3014. Now, for those not familiar with what that proposal is, listen to AgriTalk from Friday, April 17, right? Yeah.
17?
Yeah. Wasn't that last Friday? Yes.
You know, I don't know.
I think it was. I'm going to say that it was. Last Friday.
I don't know how to read a conventional calendar anymore, and I can't get my phone open. So let's go with Friday.
Okay, let's go with Friday. Scott Varlick, Varlick.
Yes.
Talked about it, the 3014. Basically, it's 30% of the, I believe it was daily kill, needs to be negotiated cattle, off-contract cattle, off-formula cattle. They have to be negotiated in the cash market. And then bring some timeliness into it. They have to see the knife in within 14 days, so that helps keep the bid current in the cash market. So, obviously with 15% maybe of the cattle that are going to market being negotiated right now on a weekly basis, it might be that high, but the cash industry, cash cattle industry is crying out for some transparency and some negotiation. And that, I mean, there's even less negotiated sales in the cash hog market. There's no question about that. There were down maybe 5%. So, okay. I want to go over some of the tweets that have come in. At HortForSci says, did I dream that Kerry Artek said we might hit 222 downside target in corn futures, July corn futures, by the end of the month, or is that just how it feels? What he's referring to is Kerry Artek. Artek Advisory is on in the fourth segment every Monday. He does an update on what his chart work is telling him about what might happen in the markets, and 222 is the downside target that he's got in place right now for this market. Mm-hmm. That ignores all fundamentals, okay? That ignores everything that is happening fundamentally in the market, and just this is what the charts are telling him right now. Now, the timing of it, he has told me that the sooner the better. Let's go ahead and get it done, okay? Right. And then see where we go from there.
Well, and it's with Kerry, it's a little bit like when we have Glenn Ring on the show, if that helps anyone. Just talking about these, like you said, strictly technically based, but, you know, hey, look, this is the possibility, and we got to know these are the numbers. And that's where he's coming from.
Right, exactly. At CB Kimbrell, in 1998, oil prices got down to around $10 per barrel. Corn ended up trading below $2 a bushel. Tell me what's different this time. Well, the list of things that are different from between now and 1998 is a mile long. But I get your point, Casey, and your point is well taken. Point is well taken. And it wasn't just 1998 that corn traded with a $1 handle. I mean, it traded on and off with a $1 handle for the next four years, I'm guessing. So, I mean, it was not a one and done when we got down to those low levels in 1998. Now, like I said, a lot of things have changed. A lot of things have changed in the markets since then. But, like Casey, your point is very, very well taken. That is not a prediction. It is just an acknowledgement that yes, sometimes weird things do happen and can happen, it's worth noting, no doubt about that. At Halber Cattle, can USDA buy live cattle paper? In other words, buy live cattle futures? No, No, yeah. I don't believe that they can. I don't believe that they can. And I don't know if that's where the problem is or not in this market, because I heard that there was some cattle moving this morning in the 90-95 range. I don't know exactly what the bid was, but I know it was still above 90 bucks. See, and a lot of people will argue, Davis, that that's where it should have been last week. Yes. And instead, the cash came in at 105. That's why I've been saying a couple of times that, you know, when I was talking with Scott Varlick on Friday, I said, I don't even know if this cash market matters anymore. Because it doesn't feel like we're going through a price discovery process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It just feels like the price is being set. And that is not right. Cattlemen, I hope you agree with me, but I hope you also understand that when I say that right now, based on the conditions that we've got, it would suggest that cattle prices should be a heck of a lot lower. Cash cattle bids should be a lot lower than what they are right now, or were at the end of last week there. That's a better way of saying
okay.
it. 90 okay. bucks, 95 bucks, maybe that's more in the right range of where they should be. I don't know for sure, but 105 sure seemed hefty based on the conversations that I had with several guys over the weekend and since that price was traded. So I don't know, man. It is a scramble just trying to keep the livestock industries up and functioning and doing what they are supposed to do. I mean, I don't know how many workers at the slaughterhouses listen to AgriTalk, but if you're out there and you're listening right now, God bless you. Keep doing it.
Here.
Yeah.
Here.
We need to keep these markets functioning as close to normal as we can. And if that's at 80 or 85% capacity, then that's what it is. If it's at 60% capacity, that's what it is. But we need to continue to function in the markets as close as we can. We're going to talk about this even further this afternoon. You got to come back. Richard Brock from Brock & Associates is going to be my guest. And tomorrow morning, Tom Kars from The Packer and a Farmer Forum right here on AgriTalk.